talk about Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin from the Wikipedia. He was an English naturalist and geologist. He's best known for his contribution to the science of evolution. Of note, he has been described as one of the most influential figures in human history. He wrote that all species of life have descended over time from common ancestors and introduced his scientific theory that this branching pattern of evolution resulted from a process he called natural selection, sometimes referred to as the survival of the fittest. Darwin published his theory of evolution with what seemed to be compelling evidence in his 1859 book on the origin of species. By the 1870s, not that long after, the scientific community and much of the general public had accepted evolution as a fact. However, there were many competing explanations, and it was not until the emergence of the modern evolutionary synthesis from the 1930s to the 50s that a broad consensus developed in which natural selection was the basic mechanism of evolution. In modified form, Darwin's scientific discovery is the unifying theory of the life sciences explaining the diversity of life, unquote. Well, we in God's church, to say the least, take exception to Darwin's theory, as we accept what Scripture says, that God created life, He created all living species. They did not originate by themselves out of random chance of the chemical soup on planet Earth, but God, the Creator, brought all life into existence. Let's just confirm that. We go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. The very first thing in the Scriptures, the very first statement in the Scriptures is pretty bold, pretty clear, which says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And it goes on to say in verse 20, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that has life, the fowl, the birds. He created all kinds of living creatures in the water. And we see later on that he brought forth cattle, verse 24, and reptiles and beasts. And it was so. And it's all tied in to the Creator God. It's very plain and simple regarding the true origin of all life. Now, it would seem that the entire science world has rejected the biblical explanation, and they have concluded that evolution is a fact. And if you do not accept it, then you're just plain ignorant. You are, or worse. But you may not realize that there have been scientists that have major problems with Darwin's theory. And there are scientists that have been bold enough to proclaim that the theory simply does not hold up under careful scrutiny. Now, fairly recently, a number of books have been written by very qualified expert scientists in their field. And they contend that there is no way, there's no way that the species of life could just have emerged by blind chance. Well, today we're going to examine what I think are fascinating findings that fully uphold God's word, which has to say who is the true origin of the species. You know, we think about some of the teachings of Darwin, we actually have to admit that he was not all wrong. For instance, his natural selection idea spawned that survival of the fittest, and it does fit where fitter creatures, healthier creatures are more apt to have good offspring than the sickly and weak. I think it's pretty obvious. Weak parents, so to speak. You know, they can transmit disease and problems. And sure, it makes sense that healthier animals would survive easier and continue to produce offspring. And you know, we find that in nature shows, right? You have the stronger male animal will typically win the fight, and that's good. You know, let the strongest animal be the one to, you know, continue with that particular species. But Darwin taught things that really can't be explained in terms of the bigger question, the question of origin, the origin of land and sea life, and of course the origin of human beings. How do we get here? How did we get here? It's one of the greatest fundamental questions we could ever ask. Well, Darwin concluded that blind forces came together to produce all the species that we have today. Of course, we counter and say, no, it was the Creator, God. A few years ago, I read an excellent book called Undeniable by Dr. Douglas Axe, A-X-E. He did his undergraduate studies at University of California, Berkeley, doctoral work at Caltech. He held postdoctoral and research scientist positions at the University of Cambridge and the Cambridge Medical Research Council Center. So he has a good resume. His work and ideas have been featured in scientific journals. And guess what? He believes in God. And he rejects evolution. It's a fantastic book. In his book, he talks about an individual named Thomas Nagel, who's a professor of philosophy at NYU. And Nagel is an atheist. He is an atheist, but he surprisingly rejects the evolutionary biology can explain everything about life, including the human mind. But he said something that was very revealing. He said the following. He says, I want atheism to be true and am made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. I want atheism to be true. It isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope that there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that, unquote. Very honest admission. And I imagine there are a lot of other people. I don't want there to be. I don't want this to be true in the Bible. I don't want to know that the God created everything and there is a God. And if we want to take life seriously, the starting point has to be our answer to questions like, you know, what is the source that everything came from? What is the source? To whom or what do we owe our very existence? I really love this quote from Dr. Axe. He said, to know where everything came from is to know where we came from. And where we came from has everything to do with who we are. And who we are has everything to do with how we ought to live. What a fantastic quote. I say amen to that. Now, through his scientific studies, Dr. Axe plainly saw that the ability for a species to emerge in just a random fashion is not possible. Not that it's difficult, it's not possible, is his conclusion. He talks about how human intuition is really correct. When we look at the world and we see the incredible amounts of life, there's still species that they're discovering. A lot of times in the ocean, you know, you can't get that far down to take a look. But when we look at it, our natural conclusion is the right conclusion. How could this just have happened? How could all of these species be there? Now, if there was only like three species on planet Earth, we might say, wow, pretty simple. You know, there's a chicken, a dog, and, you know, a cow. You know, like that's it. You know, there's nothing else. But It's unbelievable the amount of species that there is. He asked the following, and I think this is absolutely brilliant. He asked the following, would we believe the following? Would you believe, Maxwell Smart, the old show Get Smart, would you believe the following? Number one, fill a large pot with alphabet soup. Now, do we know what alphabet soup is, right? I used to have it as a kid. Alphabet soup, there's these little pasta letters in a broth, like A, B, C, and numbers. I think there's numbers as well. Yeah, it does have pasta letters and numbers. So fill a pot with alphabet soup. Okay, cover that pot, bring it to a boil. Then remove the pot from the heat, let that soup cool down. And finally, lift that lid to reveal complete instructions for building something new and useful, worthy of a patent, all spelled out in pasta letters. Would you believe that that could happen? No way, right? But according to Darwin, every form of life owes its existence to a long succession of accidents. Thankfully, we believe that design demands a designer, that creation demands a creator. We know that automobiles don't just evolve, you know, from metal and rubber. They get made by, there's an intelligence, right? There's intelligent human beings and engineers that put it all together. Now, through the last decades, science has made significant discoveries about the details of a living organism. What is an organism? How is it put together? The very basis of any organism comes down to how the genes and proteins are sequenced. How the genes and proteins, how they're put together, in what order. And that's how that's the foundation to build that species, to make it what it is. Now, the protein molecules have long chains of parts called amino acids, and it's absolutely essential that these amino acids, they just line up perfectly for an organism to function. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You don't have what you think you might have. Now, when you examine the odds of these amino acids lining up in perfect order that they need to be, purely through accidental means, which is what the theory of evolution says. No one is guiding this. No one is there pushing things around. The odds are just ridiculously astronomical. Dr. Axe found that the odds of accidental functional proteins are more than 1 in 10 followed by 70 zeros. Quite a big number. And if you're a mathematician, you understand the meaning of that number. For all intents and purposes, it's impossible. It just is not going to happen. Now, when we look at human inventions, and it's really pretty incredible what's happened, even in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And we have smartphones, we have self-driving cars, space travel and robotics. One of the most advanced products of human technology is a solar-powered underwater vehicle called Tavros 2. Tavros 2. It's operated by the University of Southern Florida, and it was designed to conduct month-long missions in the Gulf of Mexico, measuring water depth and temperature. What makes this vehicle so sophisticated, it operates autonomously. It's under the complete control of its onboard computer. There's no humans on board, nothing. It's just programmed. If it needs a recharge, it's smart enough to know, rise up to the ocean surface, get a solar recharge. It sends data to the scientists, it tweets data. Okay, and well, you know, we know that this Tavros 2 did not just happen and just, hey, there it is, it's in the water. we know it was put together by some really, really smart scientists and then engineers. But let's compare this amazing invention to something a little bit more familiar, right? You ever hear of a dolphin? Right? Ever hear of a dolphin? It's very real. Very real. You know, flipper, whatever. It's very similar in size to this Tavros. Very similar. Like all robots, the Tavros does what it's programmed to do. But dolphins, they just do what they want to do. They do what they want to do. And it has innate intelligence. You know, that's been proven. It's one of the smartest living creatures, is a dolphin. One is a physical machine, but the dolphin is much greater. It's much superior to it. We also can compare this invention, Tavros, to something even more basic. Cyanobacteria. What is cyanobacteria? Ever hear of pond scum? Right? That's cyanobacteria, pond scum, right? Single cell organisms. Despite that very humble position, right? They are light years ahead of that sophisticated Tavros invention in terms of technical sophistication. First, they are solar powered. Pond scum is solar powered. But while Tavros needs a solar collector the size of a coffee table, the bacteria does very well with a collector that is 1/1,000,000,000th that size. That's how it gets the solar energy it needs. According to Darwin, that just happened. You know, there you go. No one told it what to do. Bacteria, this pond scum can also coordinate complex sliding and other movements that Tavros cannot do. Tavros has no manufacturing capabilities, but the bacteria has an entire manufacturing plant within its microscopic walls. It can harness light energy into chemical energy. So, what is the most impressive object? Tavros or pond scum? You know, that's a trivia question. Well, it's not the amazing Tavros, but it's this natural pond scum, supposedly created through total randomness. But we know that intelligence was behind that, the great God that produced amazing living creatures like that. Let's just pause here. Let's go to Psalm 104. Because we know the Psalms really praise creation. Psalm 104. Psalm 104, and let's start in verse 1. Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God. You are very great. Understatement. You are clothed with honor and majesty, who cover yourself with light as with a garment, who stretch out the heavens like a curtain, talking about the incredible universe, who lays the beams of his chambers in the waters, who makes the clouds his chariot, who walks upon the wings of the wind. Just extolling this incredible creation here, planet Earth. Verse 10. He sends the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. By then the fowls of the heavens have their habitation, which sing among the branches. And we know that it untouched by humanity, you know, nature operates beautifully. It's just a fantastic, everything that works together in harmony. Verse 14, he causes the grass to grow for the cattle, or for the service of man. He may bring food forth out of the earth, and wine that makes glad the heart of man. I agree with that one. And oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart. This is extolling all the great things that we can appreciate here, living this life. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon, which he planted, where the birds make their nests. As for the stork, the fir trees are her house. The high hills are a refuge for the wild goats and the rocks for the conies. He appoints the moon for seasons. The sun knows it's going down. Verse 24, O Lord, how manifold are your works. There's so many things. In wisdom, you made them all. The earth is full of your riches. So is this great and wide sea, wherein are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. And again, they have not even discovered all the species of fish and things that are in the ocean. It's still an ongoing project. And we could stop there. And we have many other psalms extolling the greatness of God and the creation. You know, I had mentioned that the proteins are the building block of life, and like also genes are. Genes, they have to line up in just the right fashion for an organism to function. Dr. Axe estimated that the odds of a gene just randomly aligning in the right way would be 1 in 100 trillion. Imagine like those odds to win the lottery, right? 1 in a trillion chance, you know, roll them. Good luck with that one, right? Dr. Axe, when he examines all the evidence with respect to the origination of the complex, amazing variety of life, this is how he concludes. And again, I think it's just another beautiful quote. Quote, he says, I can only see these ingenious, creeping, climbing, swimming, soaring, blooming, burrowing, and spinning inventions as having come from the mind of God. To me, nothing else makes sense. That each one occupies its own unique place in our minds must surely reflect the fact that they were given their own places in the workshop of that supreme mind. That we have been chosen to behold the living wonders of that workshop ought to astound us. That we came from that workshop should astound us all the more. Among all the wonders that make earth their home, we alone are compelled to stop and stare, to take this whole spectacle in and to ponder it, knowing that none of it is accidental. Unquote. Amen. But I'd like to shake this guy's hand, or give him an elbow bump at least. This is coming from just a highly reputable scientist. You know, and it is a fallacy. I think sometimes we have an aversion to science and scientists. And I know some people in the church have made blanket statements like, you know, all scientists are atheists. And well, that's just not true. It's not true. There are many scientists that are very much believers in God. And that's wonderful. Dr. Axe points out that, though, if a scientist like himself proclaims openly in belief in, we'll say, intelligent design, right, they are often too labeled as believing, again, in a myth or a retreat to the Dark Ages. The book quotes a Dr. Hugo de Vries, who is also skeptical of Darwinian evolution. He said this, natural selection may explain the survival of the fittest, but it cannot explain the arrival of the fittest. Again, there's variations within a species, but how did it get there in the first place? And Darwinian evolution does not explain it. Now again, there can be changes within species. There can be changes within a species, right? And scientists call that microevolution. And there is an example, and it's just a fact, right? House sparrows were introduced to North America in 1852. Since that time, the sparrows have evolved, so we say micro-evolved, they've changed different characteristics in different locations. Sparrow populations in the north, like where we are, they're larger bodied than populations in the south. Why? Well, larger bodied birds can often survive the lower temperatures up north. So colder weather in the north may, you can say, select for the larger bodied birds. But guess what? They're still a sparrow, right? There's big sparrows and small sparrows. They are sparrows with different characteristics. It's not a new species, not a new species. So we could conclude that God created species to have variation and to change to some degree. Okay, so, and that should not bother us, you know, that's just how God created things, to not just be yellow pencils, but to have a lot of variety. That's wonderful. It's more interesting. So the point is, why biologists, they can't explain that the big changes which they would purport in evolution, they can't do it. I'd like to spend a little bit of time on another equally fascinating book. It's called Darwin's Doubt. Darwin's Doubt by Stephen Meyer. And this was a New York Times bestseller. A lot of people read this book. Came out a number of years ago, and I was really excited to see that he has a follow-up book that was supposed to come out, but then the pandemic hit, and for whatever reason, they stopped the process of issuing it. But he has a follow-up book. I can't wait to get it. Stephen Meyer. And the book zeroes in on the biggest problem some feel with Darwin's theory. And that involves what's known as the Cambrian geologic period of time, the Cambrian time. Geologists, they like to say, we had this age, we had this time, and they chart it all out. And there's a period of time they call the Cambrian period of time. Now, fossils from that time period show that many new sophisticated creatures appeared suddenly during that time frame. And they call it the Cambrian explosion. The fossils, like all of a sudden, you know, they're going through the strata and you have this, you have that, and they're all from that same time period. It's interesting that one of the most brilliant scientists who lived at the time of Darwin, a guy named Luis Agassiz, he was the first to point out the problem of Darwin. He argued that Darwin could not explain how so many new creatures could arise so suddenly. Because Darwin said, well, things arise over millions and millions of years, and they very slow, and this, you know, takes millions, and you have enough time, anything can happen, was almost that he was saying. But Agassiz says, that doesn't make any sense. Look at this time period. It's not slowly happening, it's just kind of exploding. Where's the chain of the missing link, so to speak? But there are no missing links. There are no missing links. And that Agassiz actually said, you know what? This shows me that these are acts of God. He said acts of mind. And he also said it's an intervention of an intellectual power. He didn't use the word God, but okay. But you know what? Even back then, the scientists like, you're kind of getting close to saying God did this, right? So they dismissed what he had to say, and they accepted what Darwin had to say. But of course, Agassiz was right. He was right. And here's the amazing thing, modern science, the more they know, the more they discover, it's showing that, again, Darwin's theory does not hold water. It does not hold water. Now, some that are concerned about that, boy, yeah, it seems to be right, but hold on. We have mutations. And when you have mutations in a species, things can change very rapidly. And that could, in their minds, be the reason that, for instance, we can have all these new species appear very suddenly because of mutations. However, they're not the answer. But mutations inevitably damage the organism. They don't push it forward and improve it. It's typically, there's a problem, there's a problem with the wing of this bird, it's a mutant wing. but we have yet another very prominent individual, Mary Eden. He's a professor of engineering and computer science at MIT, right? One of the greatest engineering schools in the world. He looked into the question himself. Hey, how do you build a living animal? How do you start it off and come up with an organism that is alive and functioning? Well, again, everything has to fit together. Everything has to fit together. And he also looked at mutations, and he said, no, random mutations are not the answer, because the odds of fitting things together by happenstance, it just is not possible. It's too complicated. He also concluded, even if you have millions of years for things to happen, it just is not possible. Now, that book, Darwin's Doubt, it presents some very clever arguments to try to get around some of these problems, but he shoots them down one by one. And at the end of the day, there just is no realistic evolutionary theory that says how a brand new living organism can come into being. Even a simple, what we would think is a simple organism, is incredibly complex, like that pond scum, right? You dismiss it, but it's living. It has functionality. How did it just happen and put that all together? There's an amazing quote from Bill Gates. I think we all know Bill Gates from Microsoft. What he said, talking about DNA, which again, building blocks of an organ. He said, DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. Well, software is created by mankind, right? It's very brilliant people getting together and putting things together, and we have smartphones, etc. But what is alive, what is involved with organisms, it's so much more sophisticated. How did that just happen? How did that, from blind chance, nothing is directing it, but everything gets put together in the right place, not just for one organism, but for all the organisms. Again, there are others, I'll call them honest biologists, who look at all the evidence of what Darwin taught, and they just conclude it doesn't add up. For example, this is back not that far ago, 2008, there were 16 influential evolutionary biologists. They met for a private conference in Austria. They had some different ideas, but guess what? They all concluded that the modern theory of evolution cannot explain the origin of biologic form. Now, you don't read about this in high school books. You don't see this on PBS. Everything you come across typically are people that accept evolution as a fact. But there are people out there, again, that are brilliant people in their field. Like these evolutionary biologists, and they look at it and say it doesn't work, but it's still in your science book, so to speak. It's still in your high school book or college book. It's accepted as a fact, and these people are kind of pushed to the side, but they're there. But they are there. Now, the author of Darwin's Doubt book, he talks about intelligent design. You might have heard that. It's kind of a movement, so to speak. It's called intelligent design. And it's really, from a science perspective, people that have come together and they conclude that, you know, Darwin is wrong, and they call it intelligent design is behind life. They're very careful, these people, not to invoke the name of God or the Bible. They just want to keep it on a science level, because they know that if you start to say, well, hey, let's turn to Genesis 1, right, that people are going to immediately be turned off. So they're trying to approach it differently and say, listen, let's just look at the science. Let's look at the odds. Look how things are made. And why can't that be taught as well as a antidote to Darwin? Because it's so much more compelling. Right, and that's what intelligent design is about. Now, you know, we don't have a problem here in church. You know, we're going to turn to the Bible. We're going to identify God, the God of the Bible, right? But it's their way of, I guess, try to safely get some of these ideas out to the public. So that's positive. That's positive. Now, while some biologists have seen the light, and there are, they have seen the light of the failure of the evolutionary theory, that author, Steve Meyer of Darwin's Doubt, he does ask, how come there are still so many brilliant scientists, they don't want to even consider anything else than evolution? Like, why is that? And he answered that they operate under this principle. They operate under this principle. That you cannot invoke the activity of a mind or any creative intelligence. Don't try to, you know, if there's a seminar of scientists, don't come in and say there's intelligent design. Don't try to say that there's something out there, you know, like God, right, or creative power. That's a principle. You can't bring it into the room. You can't bring it into the room. For instance, A geneticist, Richard Lewontin, said, quote, materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. That's a premise. That's a foundational premise. That materialism is everything. Don't even think about talking about anything else. Right? The divine foot, as he said. So with that type of thinking, those type of scientists, which still are the majority, they're just going to keep denying anything about the existence of the God of creation. It's just a principle that they live by. You would think, as scientists, they want to discover, they want more information and understanding. That's what the premise is, right? We want to find out more about how things work, but they reject information that's coming before their eyes, because they simply do not want to accept it. A biologist called Scott Todd, he wrote in the publication Nature. This is a sad statement, but this is what he said. Quote, even if all the data point to an intelligent designer, which they do, such a hypothesis is excluded from science because it is not naturalistic. He said, if all the data, in other words, the scientific data, not talking about the Bible, hey, turn here, the Bible says this, this, no, forget the Bible. If all the scientific data, which we talked about a little bit in this sermon, if it all points to it, he's like, nope, we're not going to consider it. Because it's not natural, it's supernatural, right? That's a sad statement, but that's a principle how so many sadly operate. Well, the Bible does not have a very high opinion of those who discount the existence of God and his role as the great creator. Let's read Psalm 14. Psalm 14. Uh-oh, this is pretty strong. Psalm 14, verse 1. The fool says in his heart, he really believes this, there is no God. There is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that does good. So the Bible's pretty blunt. You know, King David, who had the opportunity to be out where there was no neon lights and air pollution, and he just was out there in the field and saw the incredible night sky, and he had the intuition to say, hey, you know what? You know, look at the great God and what he's created. And of course, he dealt with the sheep and nature and things like that. But the Bible is pretty blunt, isn't it? The fool has said in his heart, if that's what he really believes, or she, that's foolish. It's foolishness. Paul also had some things to say. Romans chapter 1. We have Old Testament. Let's go to the New Testament. Romans chapter 1. And let's start in verse 18. It says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. And, you know, the wrath of God is revealed. You know, at the end of the day, God, who is full of love and mercy and compassion, you know, at the end of the day, people have to acknowledge that he is the creator of all things. Otherwise, that is certainly ungodliness and unrighteousness. Verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest to them, for God has showed it to them. Well, what does that mean? Right? That God is made plain, is revealed. Paul goes on to say in verse 20, for the invisible things of him, and God is spirit, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. That is an incredible statement from the Apostle Paul. He's like, okay, God is invisible, right? We don't see God. He is spirit. He's in the third heaven. But Paul's saying, just look around. You know, the intuition of looking around and the species and how the environment works together, or look around at the universe. It's still, as much as I read about it and watch all these wonderful YouTube videos about how great the universe is, it never amazes me that how incredible it is. And to think this just blind chance, like there's laws and things that function. Well, how do they get there? Why are there laws? Why is there anything? Why is there anything? Something has to precede it. Something has to bring something into existence. And again, the things that can be seen. And I think it's the fantastic, I think it's just absolutely fantastic that you have scientists, not theologians, right? But scientists that are saying, hey, you know, they're scratching their heads saying, hey, this didn't happen by chance. This is incredible. This is amazing. There's design behind this. So they are, as it says, they're out without excuse. Verse 21, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. The vanity is Darwin's theory. It doesn't hold up. It does not hold up. It was challenged at the time, but dismissed. But now it's being challenged big time. And again, when you have a book that is on the New York Times bestseller list, people are reading this because it makes sense, because it's powerful. That's good. Professing themselves to be wise in verse 22, they became fools. Uh-oh, I guess he read Psalm 14, verse 1. You know, the fool says there's no God. You know, Paul read the scriptures. And professing themselves to be brilliant, we have it all figured out. Materialism is it. Naturalism is the only way to go. And it's sad to say that they're deceived. They're deceived. They've changed the glory of the uncorruptible God, verse 23, into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. And perhaps we can read into that, you know, the theory that, you know, we descended from apes. You know, human beings that can, you know, create music and art and have intelligence to create people that can think and dwell upon the universe and can be self-existent and have consciousness. You know, that's a whole nother ball game. You know, how incredible man is. How incredible man is. The bottom line, the theory of evolution, it's in direct opposition to God's word. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? That's a no-brainer. Not only does the Bible contradict this theory, but again, recent breakthroughs in biological research by, I'll call honest scientists, they confirm life is so special. It is so complicated with incredible arrangements of things like proteins and amino acids and genes that simply could not have evolved over time by themselves, or somehow these mutations spawn these wonderful beings that come up. Darwin's theory does not hold up under scientific scrutiny. Under scientific scrutiny. And as we even heard, some leading biologists are absolutely in agreement that the theory it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We know that our universe is special. That's a whole nother sermon. Our planet Earth is special. Living organisms and animals are special. And then, oh yeah, what about us, right? Human beings. The greatest creation of man is even more special. Scientists really cannot begin to explain like human consciousness, that we have a mind, that we think and process things. They really can't explain it. They've come up with some crazy ideas, but they really can't. They can't explain it. They can't explain it. I've given you a lot of quotes. I'm going to end with one final quote. Could be my most famous quote that I've ever come across, that personally. This is from a man named Werner Heisenberg. Werner Heisenberg. If you're interested in science, he is one of the greatest physicists of the 20th century. Absolutely celebrated, a complete genius in his field. Werner Heisenberg. And he said this. He said the following. He said, "The first gulp from the glass of natural sciences will turn you into an atheist. But at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you. The first gulp from the glass of natural sciences, let me start that again. The first gulp from the glass of natural sciences will turn you into an atheist. But at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you."